three bean salad first. Henry is eating a bacon sandwich.
Mm. It's quite exciting. We're recording this at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
It's a very, very early...
It's barely light outside, isn't it? It's so...
I love it. I mean, this is the time I'm normally sat here waiting for you guys for a couple of hours. Just, you know.
You just sit, don't you?
The main problem is I haven't yet shifted my... the mucus that sort of sits on my lungs as I wake up. That's... I haven't had, you know... I haven't had the deep physical coughs yet that come from...
You haven't de-sloughed your outer casing yet, either, have you?
No, that's very much still there.
Because normally you wait for it to solidify and then you break out of it, don't you?
The outer shell.
It's sort of semi-gelatinous at the moment, isn't it?
It's still quite soft.
Sorry, I got confused, Henry, because also the plug of mucus, I normally wait for that to harden into a solid as well.
I know, because then you cough it out of, I think, three possible orifices, isn't it? It can come out of. You never know where it's going to pop out. But it's an internal convulsion, isn't it? And then just sheer force, isn't it? Sheer pressure.
It often actually comes out of the beam machine, causing untold damage to the mechanism.
Yeah.
But if it's not too hard, it can be used, can't it, as a sort of flame retardant, quite pliable building material.
And grease. Yeah, you can grease things with it.
And grease, yes, for heavy machinery.
Well, you see, it's a classic case, isn't it, that it's those natural products which are so hard for technology to replicate, isn't it? Because the complexity of the... When you zoom into it, there's a real beauty, isn't it, to the fibres, the mucus fibres, the way that they're...
the crystalline.
They fan and crystallise. And
there's this crystalline polysaccharide weft, isn't there?
That's right, yeah.
It's very similar to what the Jutes used to oil their eldest children before battle.
Yeah, but the eldest son would be sometimes so slippery he could slip through a phalanx of infantrymen, archers, horses. He could sometimes
straight into the next battle.
He could slip straight through out the other end and into the battle that was planned for later on that day. Extraordinary.
So yeah, it is a bit early. I mean,
yeah,
we should put this in proper context. Probably half the UK workforce is probably already hard at it.
Oh, rush hour is well over, definitely. The roads are empty.
Yeah, so it's not...
It feels...
It's entertainment industry early, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Showbiz has a different dawn.
It really does. It's certainly not baker early, is it? If it... Bakers, it's like... It's tomorrow for bakers, isn't it? I mean, bakers are... They've already done their sleep for today. Do you mean they're I don't know what a baker's doing right now.
Kneading, I'd imagine.
Kneading, yeah.
Is this leather... I was going to say leisure time for bakers, but I said leather time.
Oh, yeah.
Probably is leather time. Well, yeah, exactly.
Is there a difference? They say, don't they, the body wakes up in a certain order, and I feel like I maybe haven't woken up in exactly the right order, or the order is...
Still going.
That would explain why your face looks like a Picasso painting.
Yeah.
Not everything's in place
that's
yet.
That's right, it's not in the right...
There is a touch of the old unsolved Rubik's to you.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah. I've got two eyes around the left, haven't I? I feel like I'm making quite a satirical point about the Spanish Civil War, but I'm not quite sure what it is. I think I need to get through Picasso. I need to get into his blue phase, where at least you can see it's a woman sitting at a table in front of some potatoes, and it, you sort of roughly know it's a bit bluer than you'd like, but you sort of roughly know where you are.
I'm in my Goya horrors of war sketches phase, I think, at this time in the morning.
Yeah,
sort of you know, prostate bodies.
Yeah.
Prostrate or prostate?
Prostrate, I think.
Yes.
Your prostate is something else. Your prostate is, I think, is in the Dali phase of waking
that
up.
That hasn't worked at the moment. Yeah, that's still very much like a liquid clock. Whereas Mike is kind of vital, like a little...
He's as pert and fresh as a
Mike with a pearl earring.
As a Mike with a pearl earring, isn't it?
He's full Vermeer.
He's a perfect little, gorgeous little Vermeer.
Your colours are perfect.
Are you enjoying the way the light is catching my left earlobe? Just so.
Oh, it's playing over it.
It's so realistic. It's so loving the way
it seems like it's dancing over it.
Almost, and the way that you're just gently pouring fresh hot milk from that earthenware jug, and it just keeps pouring, but it doesn't run out. It's extraordinary, but at the same time, it doesn't spill over. How do you?
Well, this is what you get if you catch me early enough.
And you're pouring it into the pail of a delighted monk. And the way that the light is playing across his face from that candle. is incredible.
And I can see from that monk's red cheeks that he's a ribald monk, isn't he? He's not.
He is, but he's a good lad, Edwin, and he knows to stay quiet during the recording.
That's right.
Because he's a bit too ribald for this show.
Oh, that ribald monk.
Oh, that ribald Dutch monk. And I don't know if it's some sort of maiden in the background I can see through a latticed window. She's got a very, very complicated head handkerchief.
I think she's doing the Dance of the Veils, Henry.
She's doing the Dance of the Veils, isn't she? It really is quite the Dutch courtyard, isn't it, we've got going on in the background there.
That's my chastity escort. Okay. She's there to make sure that nothing untoward happens with me and Edwin during the recording.
That's good to know. And the candle that's sort of dripping wax over an old skull, that's just always there, isn't it? That's just Mike's desk lamp. Okay, well, I feel like I think I'm getting a bit better. I'm going to have another bite. You know, I'm going to return to this little fella. My bacon sandwich. Have another little bite. See what happens.
Absolutely dripping with ketchup.
Yeah, I've got this thing. I've got this kind of thing in my mind, which is if I get up early, I just have a thing which I think it justifies a bacon sandwich or a sort of full English. And I think of sort of builders and you know the people that actually make this country bloody work. You know what I mean? The engineers that the I don't know what I'm talking about. Oh God. The signalman, the single woman.
A signalman and a single woman.
All the single ladies.
If it wasn't for the single woman, this country would grind to a halt. So here's to you, single woman.
No, like,
and also plumbers and plasterers.
It'd be great if Beyonce did all the signal women. Maybe for a rail strike or something. So put your flags up.
If you liked it, then you should have got the right ticket, because I'm afraid I'm going to have to charge you again. This is for the Northeastern Rail and you're on a Southern train. I'm sorry. Yeah, that sort of works, doesn't it? Yeah,
pretty good.
That's actually like a little bit of comedy there, like a comedy routine.
Yeah. A little poke in the eye to big train.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. When I'm up at the crack, I think I've just got to get like a bacon roll or full English type thing into me, and it sort of really does work actually, that combo. And the ketchup, it's all about having. I always ask for two ketchups when I get a bacon roll. Sorry, because my anecdote part of my brain hasn't woken up yet. You see, I haven't woken up in the right order.
So you're sort of dipping your toe in to see if there was an anecdote.
Yeah, I was dipping my toe in. I wasn't sure.
Or just a fact. It was just a bit of.
It did awaken the beginnings of an anecdote in my brain, but again, I don't think it's fully formed, so I'm going to try it.
Okay, yeah.
Let's have a go.
But be kind.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Last week I had fish and chips, and I asked for 12 ketchups.
It's a very strong start, Ben.
Doesn't go much further than that. It's all headline, really.
Does it have a... I've got a feeling it has a sad ending, this.
No, not at all. It was just that I've come...
Were they obliging?
I've come to realise that, really, the size of the ketchup packet they give you is... absurd.
Yeah, I agree.
Most people get one, sometimes two. I just sort of, I did the mental maths. It came to 12. I said 12. He did look surprised, and it did come to about £3. And I should have gone to a newsagent's and bought a bottle, of course.
But he knew he never should have got rid of that big old dispenser that you have to use your elbow to press down on the full weight of three members of your family.
But yeah, anecdote-wise, I think that's all, that's done and dusted already. That's,
I think that was quite good, Ben. I enjoyed that.
That's good, yeah.
People who might be listening later on in the day might score it differently as an anecdote. I don't know. But for me at this time of day, that was tip-top.
Yes, I do think that audiences should try and listen to this as soon as they wake up.
Mm-mm. Yeah. By the way, oh, that has really perked me up. Hoo-hoo, I think. It was quite a loveless bacon roll, I've got to say. Because what I've done today is I've brought Costa to the studio, which I don't normally do. So Costa can be enjoyed on the road.
Yeah.
As
in the
as well as in one of their over 2,000 restaurants.
They are restaurants. And you will not...
And they are restaurants. we're very clear about that. I think it obeys the legal rule of what a restaurant is, which is if it can serve a hot egg, a warm noodle... Mm-hmm. And has a tap.
Yeah.
I think it's technically a restaurant. Yeah, it does the minimum.
Costa, it does the minimum.
It does the minimum.
He's also got a pasty? No.
No, it's a
croissant.
No, it's a croissant, surely.
It's a croissant which they give you in an evidence bag. doesn't inspire much confidence. Yeah.
But you get some understanding why no one wants that croissant anymore, why it's no longer needed.
Yeah.
Is the name of the victim on the back?
Just a society.
When you're eating Costa food outside of the ambience, the considered ambience of the restaurant, which they've spent so many man hours perfecting the environment in which to eat, a slightly disappointing bacon sandwich.
Yeah, yeah.
And some hogwash coffee.
Oh, the people they brought in to get their ambience just right.
Yeah, what's it like taking it out of the ambience of the Costa?
Have you ever seen a vampire when it goes into full broad daylight? It's sort of, yeah, it doesn't...
It's just screaming dust.
Yeah. It does have screaming dust vibes to it, yeah.
I've had Weetabix this morning, made by my own fair hand, with garnish of grape nuts.
A little sprinkling of luxury on the top there, Ben.
Yeah. And Mike, what have you dined on?
Hog on a spit.
Yeah.
I bet the monk helped with that.
He'd love that.
That ribald monk.
Of course, Edwin was... He caught the hog. We spitted it together. And yeah, I overdid it a bit. I've done myself a bit of a mischief. So I'm feeling a bit sluggish now, but I think I'll be all right. I'll kick into gear.
I am quite interested to know what all our breakfasts are, if we're okay, if we're comfortable talking about it.
I've just told you about it.
So I'm interested in grape nuts, because grape nuts are a slight maverick amongst cereals, aren't they? They're kind of, who are they for? Are they just...
Would you ever eat grape nuts solo?
Well, by myself, not surrounded by friends and family, you mean?
Exactly. That's question one.
Are you mad? Of course not. It's an extremely intense experience. I'm not doing that by myself.
Grape nuts is the most ritualistic of all the cereals, surely.
Absolutely.
It's much like doing LSD. You need to surround yourself by people you trust.
Yeah.
Who'll help you through the trip.
Yeah. Because if you end up having a bad nut, because you can have a bad nut, can't you, on grape nuts? I remember you had once one, Ben, didn't you, where you thought you were milk. Do you remember?
You were haunted by it.
It certainly reveals the truth of the universe. I remember looking at the box and just screaming, "You're neither grape nor nut!" I'm getting quite angry now.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Nor are they anywhere close to being a hybrid of grape and nut, are they? If you were to mix a grape and a nut, you wouldn't get anything near a grape nut either.
You'd get an acorn or something, wouldn't you?
The other thing which perplexed me about them is it's one of those products where it's almost like, is it even real, or is it part of our... Do I imagine it? Do grape nuts exist? Like, they're so... Because they're a different size from all the other cereal boxes.
Yes, that's very small.
They've got their own size.
Yes. And the lettering is confident as well. Yeah. So it feels like you should know about grape nuts and where they grow. Do they grow under the ground, on a bush, up a tree, off the back of a monkey? What's the deal?
Are you aware of a few years ago, our mutual friend Henry Widdicombe bought a box of grape nuts and saw on the side that they had a Twitter account, @grapenuts, that was printed on the box. Right. He went on Twitter to add them to his Twitter people he was following.
Of course.
And realised they hadn't actually registered it. So he registered it and was the official Grape Nuts Twitter for a while.
They must have hunted him down, surely.
They did eventually start... Yeah, they approached him and now, sadly, it's gone back into their ownership. But for a moment, it was absolutely fantastic.
He was the voice of Grape Nuts.
Now, I'm having a memory now of another cereal that I think falls into a similar category.
Okay.
But I can't quite remember what they were like. They were sort of like flakes, and they hadn't...
You're not talking about...
Made of corn.
Hang on there.
No, they were kind of like wheat flakes, and the cereal packet had like an old man on the front.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't think I know this one.
That's not ringing any bells at all.
And they were like gossamer thin.
Were they as thin as the flakes in Just Right? Kellogg's Just Right, because those are thin.
Thinner than that. I do like those, though, but thinner than that.
I can't think what that is.
I'm going to say it again. They were gossamer thin.
God, they sound so thin.
They're gossamer thin.
Were they just called gossamer thins?
They should have been. Have you noticed that the phrase gossamer thin is never used in society, apart from in novels, when almost everything is gossamer thin?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yes, I think that might be, just now is probably the first time I've heard it in spoken language.
But also, whenever I read that something's gossamer thin, I think, that's really conjured up how thin that is. Crikey. Crikey, that...
God, when I think of the gossamer that I've got in my chest of drawers.
But that's the thing, that's the point. I can tell you right now for a fact, for a cold, stony, hard, cold, hard fact, I don't know what gossamer is. What is it? I know it's as thin as everything in a novel.
I think it might also be. I think it might also be wispy.
What is it?
I think, is it like silk?
Okay,
gossamer. I think of it. I think it's like a silk. Like gossamer, yeah, silk plus.
Oh, we're both wrong. I've just looked it up.
What is it? Is it a cereal?
It's a fine film of cobwebs that is often seen floating in the air or caught on bushes or grass.
Is it really? I there's me thinking that you could get a kerchief of gossamer, but you can't get it.
Well, the second definition is something that is light, delicate, or sheer, such as fabric. Mm.
But that brings us back to your internal mucal plug, Ben, doesn't it? Because it's that delicacy of weft that's in the fibres there. It's that classic thing. Gossamer, silk, it's always natural products, isn't it? That can achieve that.
Right. So delicate, and yet also stronger than steel.
Yes.
The other thing I've noticed in novels, this is a wider novel point. So everything's gossamer thin.
Yeah.
And then also, because novelists can't just write walked all the time, he walked to his kitchen. Mm. They have to come up with different words meaning walked.
Yeah.
And they do this a bit with said, because you can't just say said all the time.
Gasped. Exclaimed.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think for
mouth farted. Yeah.
Yeah, that's towards the end of the novel when they're really reaching.
That's really...
And they're wishing they kept it to 180 pages.
And I think for said words, they've got quite a lot. And it's okay. They're doing all right there. Walking, they very quickly run out of ones. And all the time I'm reading this in novels, he padded to the bedroom. Padded.
He padded on his gossamer thin sandal, turned sideways and sidled through his gossamer thin doorway.
As she marched from the garage, and word burped the following.
What the fuck? He vomited.
Brackets, figuratively speaking. Close brackets.
You want me to put one foot in front of the other and go across the room?
She said while putting one foot in front of the other and going across the room.
It's true, and there aren't that many words for walk, are there?
No, they come up with some really stupid ones. Padded's the one that annoys me, because I've never heard anyone say that in real life.
Yeah, padded is. Here's another thing I've noticed in novels. I don't know what this is about, but for some reason, I find that in novels, people are very often described as having grey eyes. Have you noticed this? And I've literally never once in my whole life ever seen someone with grey eyes. In fact, I'm going to say it, grey eyes don't exist. But do you know, have you ever noticed that?
Yes.
People have grey eyes a lot.
People also notice the colour of other people's eyes more than...
Yes.
That's true.
People do.
I didn't even know how many eyes you guys have got. When I'm not looking, I think I picture Ben as a sort of cyclops, I think. And Mike has just a hand that comes out of his mouth and there's an eyeball on the end of each finger.
Yeah, the compound eye in the palm.
The compound eye in the palm.
Generally, I've shut my eyes now, so if I have to think of what colour eyes you both have...
Well, I think Henry, it is possible with Henry. Henry's are quite distinctive.
Well, I have got...
Bovine eyes.
I have got... I've been described many times as having the dead eyes of a shark.
Oh, yeah, you've mentioned that before.
So that they're black, that they're blacker than black, essentially. Yeah. They're darker than... Imagine less colour than the absence of colour. It's almost hard to imagine outside of a black hole. It's a sort of...
It's kind of... Henry's got the kind of, if you're watching a post-apocalyptic movie, it's his eye colour is the kind, you know that it's taken hold.
Yes, exactly.
Of this person.
Yeah.
He has succumbed.
It's too late.
Leave him.
Yeah.
He's not Henry anymore. Let's just really quickly pad the hell out of here. Just pad over here now. Pad. All of you, pad. They're coming. Pad.
If you look at Henry's face, you think,
yeah,
there's his chin, normal chin.
Yeah, thank you.
There's his nose, normal nose. There's his cheeks, normal cheeks. Mm. That's Henry. Henry's face, Henry's cheeks, Henry's head, Henry's forehead, the eyes.
Honjamin. Cold, bleak vortices of his eyes.
Yeah, they're sort of nightmare eyes. You could imagine them brimming over and a black fluid just sort of kind of dripping down my cheeks, couldn't you? As the evil which will destroy all of us finally takes hold.
Should we turn on the beam machine?
Expostulated Benjamin with his slate grey eyes staring down the lens of the gossamer thin laptop.
this week we're going to turn on the Bee Machine, but we're going to use a Bee Machine jingle sent in by one of our fabulous listeners.
Jolly good.
This is from John.
Thank you, John.
Here it's Dear Beans. Please find enclosed my version of the Bee Machine jingle. I hope you enjoy. Keep the lukewarm banter tepid. John from Bremen Caster.
Lovely.
Thanks, John.
Very strong.
Whew, that was
nice. It sounds like this would be machine emergency setting. Very nice. Thanks, John.
Giving me sort of 90s warehouse party vibes.
Yeah, I've had a flashback to me with my top off on a stage in Ibiza, and everyone in the club circling me and clapping as I was doing moves, and I was just going crazy, and everyone was clapping, and even the DJ went on the mic and said, "That is a cool guy. That guy, he's a cool guy." Yeah, I'm remembering when that happened in Ibiza.
You're remembering that.
Memory is a fickle thing, isn't it? Oh, it plays games. Yeah.
And that was at the Ibiza annual agricultural show, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's Ibiza, which is the international brigade of
threshing automobiles.
Yeah, it was a threshing meetup. I remember after that I was so high. I said, "Okay, the compost's on me, everyone. The compost all night is on me." I regretted that the next day. I can tell you, I had to create that compost myself.
Oh. You're still paying it off, aren't you?
Still composting that. I'm still
still spreading it.
A very, very good song. Thanks a lot, John. Brilliant work. It reminded me of a feeling. I had a flashback of a feeling, which I think in the 90s, probably at some sort of dancing, you know, some sort of dance event.
For farmers.
Well, all the farmers' daughters. It was first of the season, first dance of the season. And it was when all the eldest men in the town spread their composts, mm-hmm. and then the farmers' daughters all dance up and down. And
press it in.
Press it in. And then everyone gets dewormed. No, it reminded me of that feeling of like being in sort of those clubs and stuff. And going, why is the music also? Why we're all young and why are we listening to? Why is it all like this?
Guys, does anyone want to put the Carpenters on?
Why can't we just put
listen to the proper tune?
Why can't we just put the Carpenters? Why?
This has got something called a melody. What? Maybe you've heard of it.
Why do birds suddenly appear?
Still a great question. I still don't know the answer. That's why it's still relevant. That song. Why do they suddenly appear?
It's the handfuls of birdseed secreted around the person in their pockets. It's an old
flapjack you forgot about in the back of your trousers.
Every time you are near.
So instead of taking pills, everyone might take these little buggers I've got in my pocket. They're called birdseeds. They're a lot more fun. Let's go out and actually, rather than hallucinating a demented sort of, you know, demonic bird with the face of a teacher from school or whatever, let's actually look at some real demonic. Real demonic, but birds themselves are pretty demonic if you look at them. They're pretty freaky. So just, you don't.
Let's give a pill to a heron. See what happens.
Let's do it. See what it does.
I know it's dangerous to sort of bring up topics from the intro in this section of the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Very dangerous.
But I do want to say, if any of the listeners can think of what that gossamer thin, crispy, wheaty cereal is.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Do let us know.
This could become a like that podcast about the guy who had that song in his head that he had to track down. It could become a really epic journey, this quest to find that cereal and the old man.
Yeah, or hopefully we've got someone who works for Bellingcat who can open source it for us and work it out.
Yeah, can we track down that cereal and can we track down that old man and how old would he be now?
Sorry, which old man?
Which old man? The gossamer thin old man.
The gossamer thin. I thought you said there was an old man on the packet in front, sitting in front.
Yeah, but I think when I was... By old man, I meant like tricorn hat wearing, kind of like the Quaker Oats guy,
man of olden times.
You meant an oldie man, a ye oldie. Yeah. I thought you just meant an old man. I thought it was a weird, slightly weird marketing. Look at this old man and look at this cereal.
Look at this octogenarian widower. He's enjoying the cereal. Maybe you will too.
Oh, a ye olde man. Tricorn hat, etc.
Yeah. But not. I don't think it is the Quaker Man. That's what people are going to email in. They're going to say,
you're
going to
get a lot of Quaker Man.
I don't think it's the Quaker Man. I want to head that off at the pass.
This old man's thinking about some of the terrible things he did in Belize. What will you think about when you eat
the gossamer thin?
Gossamer flakes.
Some people might even throw at you that the Scottish Oats Man. It's not the Scottish Oats Man.
No. Is he like tossing a cable or something on the front? Or he's like doing shot put, isn't he, on the front?
I feel like he's doing something sporting.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
It's not him.
Your one doesn't sound like he's quite as sort of hewn of muscle as that guy.
No, he's more like the face you get on a Toby joke.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ruddy, red with alcohol.
Yeah, this cereal get the sort of alcoholic complexion of a colonialist bastard.
Yeah.
Oh, was it Tasty Wheaty Colonial Bastards? It was Colonial Bastards. That was it.
Okay, well, this week's topic, as sent in by Luke.
Cheers, Luke.
Thank you, Luke.
Is teachers. Can I tell you what I think is the lamest song of all time?
Yes, please.
And it makes me cringe so much when I hear it, and I can't quite put my finger on why.
Is it Don't Stand So Close To Me? The Police's pervy classic.
One of their pervy classics. There's a number of pervy classics. Roxanne!
Oh, yeah. Also, Every Breath You Take.
Yeah.
I'll be watching you. Just by putting on that weird voice, you thought we wouldn't notice the perviness, and it did take us a few decades, but we've noticed it now, mate. We've noticed it, Sting.
Do you feel like as a culture we're ready to have a reckoning about Sting's voice? Like, what's going on there?
Don't close the door, damn it! Is it if you turn up Geordie high enough, you get that, bud? Because you think, you think, because a standard Geordie, and anyone can experience this. You go to Newcastle, stand close to someone, and they'll say, "Don't stand so close to me, like man."
Yeah, flawless.
Don't stand so close to me, and don't stand so close. Damn it. It's kind of
if you get close enough, you're saying.
Yeah,
if you really push it,
if you get really, really close. Then maybe that's what they do. They go to that Sting voice. Maybe it's just a ramped up Geordie. Interesting.
So my song that I find cringy. Hey, teachers, leave those kids alone. Nothing wrong with the music necessarily. I find the sentiment, like, guys, teachers are just there to teach you to be compliant. They're just there to teach you to become a cog in the machine.
Brick in the wall, if you will.
You, 7-year-old, need to think for yourself. Anyone who's met a child knows that you can't leave a child to think for themselves. They need to.
Also, if you think about it, it's like, don't be like everyone else because, think outside the box. You can live a totally unique and different life. You don't have to go along with society's norms and conventions and values. I mean, I, for one, live in a, sort of mock Tudor huge pile in the Cotswolds, and I have over 50 Alsatians, as far as I know. I actually can't keep track of them. That's how many Alsatians you could have.
And yes, I did go to school. I did.
One of the country's top public schools, yeah.
Quite well educated.
That's why I invest my money so intelligently, because I have so many friends who have top banking jobs.
Bricks and mortar kids. It went into bricks and mortar. Okay.
And basically, I've got so many Alsatians that I didn't even pay for them because of the complex investments and.
Well, technically, it's sort of tax break, really.
They're a tax break. So essentially.
They're technically owned by the Cayman Islands.
Exactly. So my Alsatians essentially pay for themselves now. I mean, I've got a sleigh that's pulled around by Alsatians. I don't even use it. Do you know what I mean?
But they have to do that so they can write themselves off.
They have to be.
No, you're right, Henry, because being pulled around by a sleigh by Alsatians is totally normal. That's conventional thinking, isn't it? That's they're total hypocrites.
Exactly. That's such hypocrites. Because that's what everyone wants to do. No, it's a good Yeah, but I've got I've got to be honest. I don't think that what you think. I think that song's quite cool and I like it. But now that you've said that, I may reassess it.
And it'll just mar it slightly for you.
I like Pink Floyd and I just find that one line and the way that people cling to it a bit annoying. But also, you know, some teachers are bad.
Yeah, some teachers are bad. And that, I think, but also I think as a general rule to say, hey, teachers, leave those kids alone, that's not gonna that isn't a coherent policy to do with education.
Needs contextualising, doesn't it?
It needs contextualising.
Come on, Pink.
Also, of course, it was pre-Ofcom, wasn't it, that?
Listen, you're talking to a guy who recently went to a planetarium to watch a planetarium show based on Dark Side of the Moon.
Did you really?
I did. I went to Planetarium and they projected trippy 3D images onto the ceiling and played Dark Side of the Moon.
Did they hologram in Pink Floyd?
No. I think it was a very shit early version of that kind of thing. And it was meant to make you totally spin out, guys. But it was quite an impressive. Yeah. This was in Germany. I was in Germany and as we staggered out, people were like, whoa, that was amazing. And I just felt quite tired.
Do you like that song?
I'm just trying to see which one that is.
Took a moment.
I know which one you mean, though. Yeah, it's good.
It's so teenage, isn't it? Their music, it's so perfectly teenage.
Yeah, you kind of have to listen to it when you're 15 and then really like it.
Yeah.
And then you can continue to be fond later on. If you were to play it to an 80-year-old man who'd never heard it before. It would just be nonsense.
I suppose they thought of themselves as alternate thinkers, didn't they? Because they called themselves Pink Floyd. There isn't such a thing as a Floyd, is there? Except for... There was a guy called Keith Floyd, who was a TV chef in the 70s and 80s.
Very, very good with a fish.
Yeah. He did have quite a pink face a lot of the time because he drank a lot. I don't know if that's...
And he was often a bit sunburned as well, wasn't he? Because he would broadcast from, you know, Porto.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It was from the good old days when TV chefs were completely pissed from the first second of the broadcast. They could barely stand up.
They'd been just very transparently shipped out to somewhere in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, yeah.
They were in Sicily somewhere and they were just obviously rat-assed on holiday. Yeah, but at some point did have to record a fish he'd mashed up.
Do you have this experience, which is that thinking back to my school days, you realise, I think only in hindsight, that some of the teachers were really crap and probably barely holding it together as a human being.
But Ben...
Yeah, that definitely applies.
But Ben, the fact that you were throwing hot handfuls of gravel at them the second they walked in the room wouldn't have been helping.
That's part of the picture. That's the bit you're missing out. I do realise that, but I think I also have a bit more empathy with them now. I think at the time I would have been... I think I probably had fairly scathing views of them.
I think to walk out in front of a class of people like me would be...
But that's 15-year-old lads.
Horrific. I can't imagine how terrifying and awful that must have been for... I still feel bad about supply teacher Mark.
Drive him into the Thames.
To this day, only three of us know where he was buried.
We had a whole year where the whole game was to try and drive our tutor, who we had to register with every morning, to distraction. You know, we're 13 years old. That was, I mean, the whole class was unified, 30 kids unified against Mr.
Yeah.
Probably need to bleep out the name.
But so who was this teacher and what was, why did you go for him?
What was his thing? Was he maths or geography? I can't remember. He might have been maths. I never actually had him for lessons. He was just our tutor. But his classroom was quite, had these very high ceilings. And we'd do things like we'd build enormous pyramids. People would get in early. So we had time to build an enormous pyramid of all of the chairs in the room on top of as many desks as we could in the room. Absolutely massive.
That's horrible. Sort
of, you know, thing up 20 foot into the air. Really dangerous structure. Oh. And that would be the first thing that would greet him. But we were such a unified front that no one would admit that anything had happened. We'd even deny that we could see that anything was there.
You know what I find terrifying and so awful about that is that, A, this guy, like everyone, would have had his own problems anyway in life.
Yeah.
Like we all have to deal with, even if we don't have kids psychologically torturing us as soon as we get in the door at work. He's got...
Yeah, he's got a Nissan Micra that's on its last legs. His mum's fallen over the weekend.
Yeah.
He's had toothache for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Those verrucas aren't shifting, so the water polo team won't let him back. We don't know any of that.
He's getting no replies from the letters he sends to Cindy Lauper every week. And
even just a no, I don't want to have lunch, just any would be something, just a reply.
He is absolutely getting mail-bombed by Topow, though, and he's never made contact with him, not even once.
And he has to come in, but it's the unified front that's frightening. Like all of you doing it together, but also I remember,
and he didn't start it either. I've thought about this. I don't think there was any inciting incident where I don't think there was no vengeance. The motive was pure sadism on our part. I think
it's also the chaos of it, because like the meaninglessness, because you can't fight an enemy who doesn't make sense. Like, because there's no logical response to a pyramid of chairs. Because if you say deconstruct the pyramid, that's a mad thing to say. Why are you deconstructing a pyramid? You know, like, none of it makes sense. So I remember that sort of, like, being chaotic in front of teachers.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel very sorry for them now.
Poor teachers.
But then some of them seem to escape this fate somehow.
Yes, that's so true. That's so true.
And I think it was the ones that you knew... You knew that the ones that would react were the ones you were going to go for. So the ones that were going to get angry for some reason, you knew you wanted that somehow. Whereas the ones that were a bit cooler were just going to laugh it off.
Mm. But also, I'm going to change names, but I think we should change names. So in my case, there was lovely Dr. Beige.
Beige.
And Dr. Beige was a history teacher, and we just all absolutely loved Dr. Beige.
Real name, Dr. Brown?
Correct.
I've cracked the code.
We all absolutely love Dr. Puce. But I think as a teacher, it's very hard to calculate to get that right. And
because you can't be too matey.
No. The one who got it most right, I think, okay, again, nom de pod, we'll call him Mr. Hyundai.
Ah, Mr. Mitsubishi.
So he was a math teacher. And he was getting on a bit, but he definitely wasn't cool at all. And also he never got angry. And we tried with him, and we'd sort of paint the windowsill that he sat on. We'd cover that with chalk dust. He'd have chalk on his ass at the end of every single lesson. Someone would always be playing jack-o'-lanterns in his eyeballs. We'd muck about with him, but it was just, he didn't give a toss.
Sorry, when you say playing jack-o'-lanterns with someone's eyeballs, do you mean scooping out the eyeballs and replacing them with two mini candles?
Exactly right. There's no issue. But he was completely resilient. I mean, he'd do sort of gruff sort of smoker's chuckle about it now and again. Yeah. And then he basically, as soon as, before he'd even sat down, he'd started his lesson. And he never made any sense. He'd talk about some sort of history of calculus thing. No one understood what he was talking about. And he'd just do that until the bell went. And he had some kind of special, like he was within his own sort of hardened carapace somehow. But he's quite a nice bloke as well. He was just separate. He was in another universe.
But what is that quality? Is it about knowing yourself? Does that guy, if he kind of knows who he is and he's kind of...
Yes.
He's kind of cool in himself, or he's kind of... Because what would happen to us? That's what I find fascinating. I mean, I think I would... Okay, here's what I would do. I think I know what I would do if I had to teach a class.
Well, you'd be dead by the end of the day.
I'd be dead by the end of the day. And it would be the first case of everyone in a school, all the pupils, all the teachers, all the staff, killing one person together.
PTA.
The governors.
Ground staff. The priests.
Ex-pupils coming back.
Yeah.
Honoured alumni.
A plumber who was just doing some work in the gym toilets.
So how would you play it?
Well, my worry is that...
But wouldn't you be an art teacher probably, wouldn't you? I don't know. Is that right? Is that what you go for? Maybe English or art? What would it be? I think you'd be safest in art.
But art teachers are a whole different breed, right? You've just got to...
Art's a different breed. Different breed, yeah.
That's why I think where you'd be safer.
I think I'd be safe safest. In art, but if I was teaching, let's be frank, a real subject. The thing is, we've all done stand-up, so we've all done... We all kind of know what it is.
We've all lost control of a room.
We've all lost control of a room. We've all been described at various phases of our careers as unbookable.
We've all had a full bottle of Kronenbourg 1664 launched at our heads.
We know how it feels to be hounded out of a room.
We know what it's like to be walking across a car park a little bit faster than you would normally, just because you genuinely feel a little bit worried about your safety.
Yeah. We've all had the phone call, which is where we've heard the words, "I'm sorry, I just can't in all good faith pay you for what you did last night." And we've all heard the dreaded words for any comedian from a friend or colleague after leaving stage, which was, that was really fun. Almost as devastating as, did you enjoy that?
Or you should do comedy.
You should try writing your little skits. But we've all crossed that, some might say, sacred threshold between the stage and the rest of the world, which I personally think is actually, in a way, kind of stage in itself. But But the teacher has no green room. You see, the teacher has no wings. He or she has to come straight from the hall into the classroom. That's pretty hard, isn't it? There's no... Because I think a teacher should really have an offstage space, a kind of a wings where they can...
walk-on music.
What would you go for, Ben, music-wise?
I'd go for Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. And then on an offstage mic, please welcome, it's your math teacher for today, Benjamin Partridge.
And then you come and dress as an eagle and pick Kring
on a high wire.
On a mini Hyundai on a high wire.
I think the thing that I came to realise quite quickly is that the thing that governed when your class got a bollocking had nothing to do with the behaviour of your class. It was entirely down to the mood of the teacher who was giving out the bollocking.
It was all personal stuff to do with whether Cindy Lauper had got in touch.
Yeah,
it's true. It's all there.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. At the time, I didn't think we realised that, did we?
Well, I remember realising it once because we just got bollocked. The whole class got severely bollocked and we had done nothing really. We were just a bit noisy or whatever, but it was normal. It was within the bounds of normal behaviour.
Yeah.
Mr. Bennett had missed bin day or something like that.
Exactly. And we just got this massive bollocking and we could all sort of just, we could feel ourselves going like, why? Like, what? And then you realise, oh yeah, it's because he's having a really bad day. Because Cindy Lauper has actually got back with a cease and desist letter.
It's the worst possible outcome.
And Tapao have moved in next door.
And they've put a letterbox in the adjoining wall to save time.
They're posting things directly into his house.
It's right next to them from their bureau, directly into his toaster.
Teachers.
Teachers. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you, teachers.
Thank you, teachers.
For all that you do.
Thank you, teachers. Yeah. Heroes.
And we talked a little bit about bad teachers, but all of the teachers listening to this are good teachers.
That's right. Except for one of you.
Time for your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
George emails, Dear Beans, in your recent episode, I was delighted to hear mention of my hometown of Nottingham.
Oh, yeah.
However, that delight soon turned to horror.
Uh-oh.
When you joked that the shopping centre in Nottingham is probably called the Robin Hood Shopping Centre.
Good joke there, come on.
Also, good name.
Also, probably true.
I'm not upset simply because this isn't true. Brackets, it's called the Victoria Centre.
By the way, we only said it was probably true.
It's true.
Yeah.
But more because you fell back on the easy Nottingham reference of Robin Hood. There are many things that England's, nay, Britain's best city is known for. You could have talked about how it's the home of the
Friar Tuck. Maid Marian. The Sheriff of Nottingham. Alan Rickman. Archery contests.
Little John.
Battlements. People swinging on chandeliers wearing very, very tight green tights. Yeah, carry on. Sorry.
Apples on heads. Or was that William Tell?
That's William Tell. Same vibe.
You could have talked about how it's the home of the pharmacy boots.
Oh, that is quite interesting. But hang on. Is he just saying they've got a boot?
They might have a big boot.
They might have a big boot.
Might have one of those two-floor boots. You never know. With a little escalator.
Where you can get jabs. Yeah. Get a flu jab in there.
But it's such a crushing blow when you realise you've got to go upstairs. I think I'd rather just not treat these hemorrhoids. I'll let them just...
Take over.
I'll let them take over.
Did you know that the Arboretum in Nottingham was the inspiration for Neverland in J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan?
Yeah, we all knew that. Yeah, we knew that. We assumed everyone knew that. That's why we went for Robin Hood.
This is barely scratching the surface of what Nottingham has to offer. So next time you mention Nottingham in the podcast, which I'm sure must be soon, all I ask is that you don't simply make a pun about Robin Hood and move on, but that you help spread awareness of the rich cultural tapestry that Nottingham offers.
Fair enough. I think it is unfair to make constant references to Robin Hood while talking about Nottingham. And I think he's really hit the bullseye with that comment. And I'm going to put all my conversational arrows back in their quiver now. Take off my green hat and stop talking about it, Robin Hood. This is a fan, good point. What's an arboretum?
Trees.
Like a zoo for trees.
So it's some trees. I mean, all trees are in a zoo for trees, aren't they?
But they might have exotic trees that you wouldn't normally get.
Oh, okay.
They'll have tree keepers. And you can watch them feeding the trees if you go at the right time.
And some of those trees will, what?
Well, some of them will be asleep.
Is there really such a thing as a tree keeper? No. I know that Nottingham is famous for, I think Nottingham's famous for shoes.
No, that's Northampton.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You know, what's he called again, the guy that emailed that one?
George.
George, sorry. Genuinely apologise for all the Robin Hood stuff. And I owe you one. For example, if you ever need to cross a river, I'll carry you across it, maybe. Still making Robin Hood references.
I don't remember that from Robin Hood.
Does he do like that?
Doesn't someone carry someone across a river? Richard Littlejohn. John.
He does. You're right. He carried a Daily Mail columnist.
That's right.
I think he fired an arrow into a tree on the other side, into a tree zoo, and then swung on a rope.
Are you ready for an email that's entitled Wozniak Bollockfest 2023 Headline Act?
Oh, my God.
Oh, bring it on.
Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Dear Beans, set the scene. Wednesday the 29th of March. I open Spotify and press play on the 5th Wednesday Kanda Aberration broadcast. So that was our episode about how we don't put out an episode, we don't work on the 5th Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Flash forward some hours.
Am I about to get a bollocking for a non-episode? Carry on.
Steady.
I'm braced.
Flash forward some hours and a mix of concerted bouts of concentrated work effort and internet scrolling interspersed with food and coffee that I remember I had a gig to attend that evening. A birthday present, in fact. I arrived at the venue, a solo performer with the subject matter of a family member traversing Europe in the midst of war.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Wozniak performing a solo stand-up in Brighton on a 5th Wednesday. Come on. Mike, if I may do with the presentries, I appeal to you to uphold the Bean Treaty of non-working on the 5th Wednesday of the month. I believe this includes your non-Bean activity.
Okay. I admit it. I'm a scab. Sorry. I was hoping you wouldn't find out about that, Ben and Henry. But
Can I say, in Mike's defence...
What he does cannot be considered work.
He phones it in. You can't call it work. I mean, it'll feel like hard work.
Oh, yay. Oh, hi, everyone.
But
it's a good defence.
The tour continues, Mike?
Tour's still going on in much the same vein. And I'm going to use that Henry defence. That's quite good.
So that's bollocking. That's a reflecto.
Reflecto bollock.
It's not work in the sense that it's
my passion.
It's a passion, and
it never feels like work.
Because the fact is, the great thing about what we all do is we're just big kids playing and having fun all the bloody time, aren't we?
That's definitely how Mike feels when he has to drive from Exeter to Glasgow for a gig.
Which I'm doing next week.
He just imagines he's in a big Tonka car, doesn't he? Beep, beep, there we go, Tonka car. Woo, woo, beep, beep.
Waving everyone on the bridges. Oh, a lovely time.
2 hours later, beep, beep, Tonka car.
Only 7 hours to go. Nick emails, Dear Beans, I'm watching a British comedy series in which the lead character and his partner go to A&E after a sexual accident.
Mm-hmm.
They have to explain the situation to a Burmese doctor. I really recognise his voice, but not having my phone to hand, I had to trust my brain to figure it out. To my wife's irritation, I insisted on replaying the doctor's line. The line was, "The left index finger was put in the anus of your boyfriend, over and over again, until a terrible realisation dawned on me. No, it can't be. That's not Mike Wozniak from Three Bean Salad, is it? I'm sorry to say that I don't know what any of you beans look like except for your descriptions of each other. That's this well-built, bearded, handsome doctor on screen whose only lines are about an anal insertion was Mike, was deeply unsettling and quite frankly ruined the whole TV show for me. It also ruined it for my wife, as I wouldn't shut up about it and she has no idea what Three Bean Salad is.
Thank you. And thank you for calling it Handsome Doctor. The part, well, I auditioned as well, many of the parts I've done in my life, I don't have a name. This part was, the audition piece was for Handsome Doctor. And when I did the role in the credits, in the at the end of the show, it was simply Doctor. made that editorial change in post.
Look, guys, it's just not, we don't want to get sued. It's just not worth it.
That was in, what was it called? It was called Scrotal Recall, although they changed the name.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Lovesick, that was it.
Yes. Ah, yes.
Single scener, little afternoon work, and then sent away, never to return.
And your line was, the left index finger was put into the anus of your boyfriend.
Mm. Yeah, and the difficulty with a line like that is not to, you don't want to lean into it too hard. It's, you've got to believe the subtext, really, and throw the line away, I think, is the key with that kind of piece of dialogue like that. You know, it's your moment in the sun, sure, but you've just got to breathe the scene.
What word do you stress? Because you've always got to stress one word, haven't you, in a sentence as an actor?
Index. Always index. And if the word index doesn't appear in a line of dialogue, I will find a way to crowbar it here.
Yeah.
Acting tip there.
Because, you know, an untrained actors like me or Henry, we're not really actors, but, you know, we'd probably stress the word anus.
Well, yeah.
That would be your first instinct. And it's a rookie error because the stress is implicitly there with anus. As soon as anus appears in a line of dialogue, that's all anyone's thinking about. That anus is its own stress.
Yes.
You know?
It doesn't need stressing. It's already stressed, as you say.
It's as soon as anus pops up in a conversation, in dialogue, it comes pre-stressed.
Welcome to the Actors Studio with Mike Wozniak.
Yeah. Chapter 3, anus.
So what was the line again, Ben? What's the exact line? Can you read it?
Let's give it to Henry. So the left index finger was put in the anus of your boyfriend.
Left index finger. So I'm a very, was put in the anus of your boyfriend. Because I'm a very natural, you said I'm not an actor, Ben, I disagree with that, but I'm a very natural actor. The left index finger was put in the, so yeah, it's about throwing away anus, is it, Mike? Yeah,
throw the anus away.
Actually, you know what, this is a teaching episode. Mike, teach me how to say this line. So would you say I throw anus away?
So think of an important anus in your life.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's very close to home, this one, is that all right?
That's good, use that.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't tell me about it.
Okay.
Bury that down deep.
Okay.
Okay. Pick a random word that you're going to put the stress on.
One of the words in the sentence.
The words in the sentence. The more random, the better.
Yeah.
Because then you give yourself some Pacino vibes.
Okay, yeah.
And everyone will think you're doing really good acting if there's a really weird stress somewhere in the middle of the... Yeah. And then take a deep breath.
Okay.
And go.
The left index finger was put in the anus of your boyfriend.
Oh.
Yeah?
Oh, wow.
Yeah? Yeah?
Oh, lovely. That was really lovely stuff.
Okay, my turn.
Okay.
Here we go. The left index finger was put in the anus of your boyfriend.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Very nice. Very nice stuff. Very early Alec Guinness, I thought.
But that, to me, that felt like... No offense, but that, for me, that felt like you were slightly trying to draw focus and steal the scene, because that feels like that's the continuing adventures of Dr. Anus. That felt like that was your show. You know what I mean?
I take that as a compliment, Henry.
Because I'm more New York school. It's truth. Do you know what I mean?
And then let's finish off then. Mike, could you give us the correct reading of the line?
Yeah, just give us the right answer, please, and answer the question.
The left index finger was put in the anus of your boyfriend.
Yeah.
It's amazing when you hear it, Henry, isn't it? And you're like, oh, that's how you meant
that's
to do it.
That's just, great acting isn't acting. That was just real.
That's how it would, yeah, that's how anyone listening would say it.
Yeah. But what's difficult is, that's why people think acting's easy, actually, isn't it?
You have to unthink acting.
And it's so hard to unthink.
Mm. Whereas I'm able to unthink very easily. There's usually absolutely nothing going on in there at all.
patreon.com/3beansalad.
As ever, a big thank you to all of our patrons.
Thank you. Patrons on Patreon.
Go to patreon.com/3beansalad to check that out. You can get rid of those ads, those pesky ads. You can get a bonus episode every month where I was thinking about this. You know, we did an episode earlier this month where it was meant to be about TV crime shows, but the final episode actually contained nothing about that topic whatsoever.
Is that true?
Yes. I can't remember what we talked about instead, but...
Did that happen with dentists as well in the end or not?
There's a bit of dentist chat, but it's mainly about lobsters. Okay. But I think if you are actually interested in those topics, what will often happen is that our actual chat about that stuff will end up in the bonus episode.
Or just Google it, you know what I mean? There's other ways. Certainly, if you're doing academic research on something.
We probably wouldn't use us as a primary source.
Not as a primary source. Go down the British Library if you're London-based. I think it's quite easy to get in there now.
That's quite a London-centric for you, Henry. You could also go to the National Library of Wales in Aberystwyth.
That's right. And I think there's a couple of... there's a book or two knocking around a car park behind a Wix in Exeter.
We've got an old red phone box that someone's left some Grishams in.
Right, yeah.
And I think a couple of Delia Smiths. A
couple of David Baldatries.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to swap in, swap out. But yeah, it's up to you.
And there are various tiers to join at. If you join at the Sean Bean tier, you get a little shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge where Mike was last night.
You bet I was. Because, of course, it was the...
It was the Root Veg Disco, wasn't it?
It was the Root Veg Disco. It's an event that's very special to me. And here's my report.
It was the Root Veg Disco last night at the Sean Bean Lounge where a tuberous root boogaloo was as welcome to shake it as a rhizomic disco finger. Brian Mock ensured the pH of the dance floor remained steadily at 6 to 6.5 by rototilling into it the well-rotted manure of Matt Verrill, Ross Deans and Craig Williamson, and boiling off the elemental sulphur of Lizzie Shaw for use in fine adjustments. Tunes came from a mix of Graham, Dirty Onions, Denny on Dex, and live music from Mrs. Jodie Pocock and the Root Maggots, featuring Delith Jones on Vibes, Isabel Trolio on Tuba, and Matt on Sweet Potato Flute. First and last on the dance floor was Amy Simpson with a high stamina complex polysaccharide solo skip jive. Charlotte Clark, Jason Ernest, Vic and Madeline Dallaston teamed up for a four-way turnip-based vegan turkey trot, while Charlie Berry, Rab Roll and Matthew Frey left onlookers slack-jawed at their ginger-based knobbly pole dance. Abigail Walsh's celeriac lambada repeatedly intruded upon a hog potato conga, separating Nick Andrews from the line whose attempt to rejoin detached Jim O'Brien, whose exit distracted Emma Smith, resulting in contralateral conga kick de-alignment, which Sandy Perry attempted to correct, which Alistair Lindsay mistook for an act of trouser graffiti in progress, leading him to attempt a citizen's arrest armed with nothing but an unglazed parsnip. Elsewhere, Jaboab's cat daddied a Cornish yam, and Duncan Scott techanod with a Jerusalem artichoke, while Liam Myerscough, Michelle and Steph Han treated the crowd to a liturgical dance with fennel from the waist up and, bravely, horseradish from the waist down. The three-way garlic crumping from Reese, Peter Templeman and Mr. Jeff was too strong a flavour for most dance palates, but only lasted seconds when it was brought down by Ben Fox's Crowd Harvest. Davina Bartles, Chris Cameron, Chris and Carl Saunders caused a stir ahead of the event with talk of their kohlrabi germination zapatillado, but at the time of writing remained subsurface and are rumoured to be waterlogged. Special effort award went to Ed Wilkins and Mark Linton for their carrot-themed batter de cola flamenco robes, which was then withdrawn by Sean Bean, who felt the robes to be dangerously provocative. Award for fewest bruises sustained in the beetroot Charleston went to Carrie Sharman. Award for bruise that most resembles a sovereign nation, Hannah Lawrence, brackets Mauritania. Thanks all.
So that's the 3 Bean Salad podcast for this week. And to play us out, a version of our theme tune sent in by Graham.
Thank you, Graham.
Graham writes, "Hello, Beans. I'm loving the pod," as the kids would say. Oh. "As a man with a copy of GarageBand on his laptop and too much time on his hands, I thought I should have a crack at your theme tune. I've taken the liberty of interpreting it in the style of a James Bond soundtrack."
Ooh.
"That should please the provincial dad segment of the listenership, if nothing else." So...
It certainly does. Well judged.
Picture the scene. A white Lotus Esprit emerges from azure waves onto a deserted tropical beach. At the wheel of the submersible sports car sits suave secret agent Mike Wozniak.
Keep talking.
Rocking a safari jacket and beige slacks, as only he can.
That's what I'm wearing right now. Yes, this is amazing.
In the passenger seat lounges the glamorous and enigmatic Henry Packer.
Bit of eye candy.
Yeah.
Henry turns to Wozniak and says breathily, "Mike, thank you for freeing me from Dr. Spurbs' clutches. That fiend wanted to use my elemental force of my lukewarm chat to power his undersea base, but I've sworn to use my middling banter only for good." "Well, you can't sit on your own arse," quips Wozniak distractedly, nice, as he negotiates the Lotus around an abandoned deck chair. The tranquility of the beach is suddenly shattered as a gigantic mechanical crab rises up from the sand to intercept the fleeing pair. "It's one of Dr. Spurbs' impractical sea-themed vehicles," cries Henry. And look who's at the controls. It's Spurbs' top henchman and bridge partner, the evil Benjamin.
Lovely.
Still alive.
Wozniak narrows his eyes and mutters to himself, "It's got us in a pincer movement. Something about crab sticks. I must start writing these bon mots down in advance." He guns the engine of the Lotus, and the chase is on. All the best, Graham from the New Forest.
Graham, that was magnificent.
Lovely stuff.
So we'll play that
out. Thank you. This is very exciting.
Yes, and thank you, listener, for lending us your ears. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you, thank you. Cheerio.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye.